Hello and welcome to Tapped. I'm Julie Donofrio, and joining me today is Sarah Awe. Sarah is a journalist specializing in parenting, education, and health issues. In addition to being a mom to two teens, a boy and a girl. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited you're here. You have co-authored two books, Stress-Free Potty Training and Stress-Free Discipline, and you are now working on your third. If you could tell us about your new book.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Right now it's in the proposal stages, but the working title is Hypersexed. And it's a book that's going to help parents help their children navigate the world that we live in today, which is pretty hypersexualized. It's much more so than it has been in past generations. And how parents can help their children deal with that. It really starts at a very young age, and parents need to lay a foundation early so that when their children are in the tween and teen age ranges, they'll be able to handle what comes at them.
I think that's such an interesting topic, and I really do look forward to the book. I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you.
And I think what I love is that all your books have really been about trying to offer helpful advice to parents. These can be very complicated waters, as you said, to traverse. And so that's why I wanted to talk to you today about perhaps helping folks get a stress-free school year.
That should be a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's that time of year. And I know it's not one size fits all. Not every child is experiencing the same thing. But, it can be a bit overwhelming for both parents and kids this time of year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it really is. It can be a very stressful time of year. It can also be a very exciting time of year, and it can be both of those things at the same time, too. So, I always think of the start of the school year as a milestone. I know we were talking before, and, New Year's is the start of the calendar year, but I've always sort of marked my years by the start of the school and the school season. So I think a lot of families do.
Absolutely. I was one of those who loved shopping for the school supplies it's exciting, but I think for a lot of kids though, it can be a little overwhelming. You're not sure if you're going to fit in or homework challenges. So what are some things that can maybe parents can do to help ease their kids into the new year and throughout the year?
Sure. Well, you really have to know your kid, and every child is going to have different kinds of things that they might be anxious about. And you have to weigh the situation that your family is in as well. Depending on the age of your child, they may be going into a particular school year this year that is either more challenging, or it's in a new school building. If they've graduated to middle school or high school this year, then that presents its own challenges than if they're in the same building that they were at last year with the same kids and some of the same teachers that they may know. So knowing and taking stock of what your situation is, knowing what, kinds of things do make your child a little bit anxious. There are some kids who, may be starting to ride their bikes to school this year, whereas in years past they haven't. And so being able to just sort of step back a little bit, take a look at those kinds of things that are new, hopefully do a dry run with many of them, especially getting to and from school. If that's going to be different this year, go out and do that a couple of days in advance, run through the steps, act like it's a normal school morning, and see what happens with your child. I know there are a lot of families that, if their child is walking or riding their bike to school, they'll go out a couple of days in advance, and sometimes even more than once. They'll go out and they'll, have them do a dry run. Parents can go with and make sure that, that they stop at the stop signs and and crossing the crosswalks and all of that. And that's really important for peace of mind, but also for your child to know what's coming at them, what they're going to be, you know, having to deal with on the way to school. Trying to do that at the time of, you know, the same time of day that they would in a regular school day is really important as well, because then you'll see what the traffic is like. You can also do a dry run with role modeling, meeting new kids. If your family has moved, or if your child is starting in a new school where they might not know as many people, you know, doing a role modeling session with them about how they would approach a new group of kids is not a bad thing. That can be very helpful to some kids. It might feel a little bit staged, or it might feel a little bit strange to do it first, especially if it's not something you've done before. But that can be a very effective tool for teaching your children the kinds of things that they might need to know.
You know, that's a great idea about how to approach new kids. I know my niece went on a play date. A mom of a new girl coming into the school had gone onto Facebook to a parenting group at the school and said, would anyone be available? And my sister-in-law very kindly said, yes, we'll organize a play date because my daughter just went through this 2 years ago. So I thought that was a wonderful idea to just help what can be a very scary time for.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's a great way to do it. You know, there are going to be other people that are in the same boat as you or your child. Put it out there and just say, hey, you know, we just moved to the area. We're going to be starting school next Monday, and we'd love to meet a few people in advance. Maybe if you've got a, you know, a way to meet for ice cream, or, you know, go to the movies, or do something that's fairly easy and non-committal for any of the kids or the families, and just make it a meet and greet. And that's an easy thing to do that can be really, really effective to help your child to ease their anxieties, or just to help them ease into a new situation.
And I think for the parents too, because I know my sister-in-law
Oh,
stayed and
for
hung
sure.
out. And so I think as a new mom to a school, that was probably a relief to be like, oh, I know somebody.
For sure. Yeah. Everybody needs friends, especially
Absolutely.
mommies.
Absolutely. And I think another idea that you had pitched was get to know the new teacher.
Oh, for sure. Most schools will do something like a meet the teacher, especially at the elementary age ranges. When you get up into middle and high school, they might have something that's like that, or they might have something more like an open house, even a day where you pick up your schedule in advance. Those kinds of things are really, really helpful to go to for both parents as well as for students. So, you know, if you have to, I know some of them are during the day, they're not always at night. So, if you have to take some time off work, see if you can make it work in order to be there, because those can be very important for all members of the family.
And I think also throughout the school year, because you know, if your child starts having some challenges, whether it's with the workload or with perhaps a situation with another student, I think it's good to have that rapport with the teacher, with the principal.
Absolutely. You know, the world is made up of relationships, and that's not any different when you are a parent dealing with a child in a school, with a teacher and a principal, and a variety of personalities, all encased in all of those relationships. So getting to know the teacher, you know, being able to, if you can, volunteer some time, if you can go in during the school day, and if you can't, offering to do some things at home. There are plenty of kinds of things that teachers need, that people can even just parents can help collate papers at night and send them back in with their kids the next day. Meeting the principal, joining the PTA or the parent organization that's at your school, or the school advisory committee. I mean, there's so many different ways to get involved. Just find a way that's going to work for you, and that's, you know, works for your interests and your child, and get involved and start those relationships early. And that way, if you do ever hit a problem or a snag or something that's concerning to you, you have that relationship that you can go to the teacher or the principal and say, hey, I'm not really sure what's going on here, but I'm a little bit concerned, and then start that conversation. It really works wonders.
Absolutely. I know my mom was a teacher for 40 years, And she, oh gosh, those room mothers or room parents, they were such a huge help.
They are. Yep, they are. And sometimes they are, just the most amazing interior decorators that you've ever seen. Very often they are helping to be problem solvers between parents and teachers in the classroom and, coordinating field trips and the information that's going out and that sort of thing. So yeah, they are just fabulous people. And it's a wonderful, way to volunteer time, and energy in the classroom to help take some of that burden off the teacher. So.
Absolutely. So, a big concern for students and parents is homework. I know there's been a lot of talk about what to do with it. Is there too much? Is it overwhelming? Parents don't know the new math.
Yes, it can be. Homework is one of those words that is just uttered with a groan usually. Homework by parents and by students as well. And it really can be a chore for everybody. Just like with work, when you get home from working all day, you don't want to do more work, right? Kids are kind of the same way. So,
There are some school districts that have been looking to do away with homework. I've heard of a few elementaries who are doing that, not so much middle and high. But yeah, it is something that, some school districts have moved towards. There is a national rule of thumb that is about 10 minutes per grade per night. So a first grader would do 10 minutes of homework, a second grader 20, and so on, up to a senior in high school, which could be up to 120 minutes per night. And that's kind of a rule of thumb. It's not exact, and it never will be. There are certainly kids who could do 10 minutes of homework in, 3.5 minutes, and there's others who might take 15 or 20 to do that same 10-minute homework. If you find that your child is having a little bit of trouble on a regular basis, not just once or twice, but on a regular basis, then talk with your child's teacher about it and let them know. They might have noticed something in school and they can talk to you about it, or they might be able to give you some good ideas of other things that you might be able to do. Different children learn in different ways, and so it might be that, paper and pencil homework is not going to be as exciting as, this online teaching tool that the teacher could tell you to take a look at and do instead. And that could be something that could be worked out.
That's great advice. So a lot of kids, I know my friends are often, harried because of different schedules and after school programs and
Oh,
adding the
yeah.
homework into the mix. So again, it's not a one size fits all, but any advice on juggling multiple activities and schedules?
Yeah, I think we're all in that boat on probably a pretty regular basis. I know I sure am. You juggle as much as you can between sports and, friends and homework and, family and doing other kinds of things as well. It is hard to juggle all of that. When parents make school a priority, and that includes homework, then that trickles down to students, and they know that that schoolwork is a priority. That doesn't mean it needs to be the priority every single time, no matter what, but making sure that your kids know that their education is a priority to you is important, because it does set the tone. In terms of homework as something to juggle, the point of homework is to put what your child has learned at school into practice on their own. And so you need to be just available to help. You don't need to sit down next to your child unless they're, really young and just starting in the homework career. You don't need to sit there and be right there with them. You certainly don't want to do anything distracting. So maybe take that time to read the paper or cook dinner or read a book. And if your child has problems, then what you can do is ask leading questions that will get them to explain to you what problem they're having. You can ask, okay, well, which question are you on? Or why don't you read that question out loud first? Or what part of this do you not understand? And use those kinds of questions to start a conversation to have them explain to you what's going on and where they need the help, so that you're not just sitting down taking over the math problem or the essay question and doing it for them.
Yeah, because no one learns that way. We've already done it. So why?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once you've given them some assistance and pointed them in the right direction, then you step away and let them finish it on their own. You know, the point of homework is to complete it, first of all, because it's practice. Correctness really should be second. So, and that's something that, as a parent, you don't necessarily need to correct their homework unless it's something that they are having trouble with and you are working with them consistently on. But correcting the homework is really something for the teacher to do. And then, you know, getting it perfect should be the third priority out of all of those three. So completion first, correctness is second, and optimal performance would be third.
And so you have a middle schooler and a high schooler.
And a high schooler, yes.
Oh, which
fun,
is
fun, fun.
I'm sure. And college is on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
As for, you know, and so that can be a bit overwhelming for for kids to think about, because they want to have the extracurriculars and make sure their application is perfect. And so any words of advice as you're dealing with this on your own?
Well, you know, just like with starting a relationship with your child's teacher in elementary school, when you get into the older age ranges, you want to have a relationship with the guidance counselor as well. They are the people that are on campus of the high schools that really know, you know, what kinds of classes there are available, what kinds of extra opportunities are available, whether that might be taking AP classes or honors or, you know, dual enrollment. Some places do allow that, and there are some kids who can actually graduate high school and already have some college credits, and in some cases have an AA degree. And your guidance counselor is really that main point person for all of that information. So, you know, before your child even starts high school, the summer between 8th and 9th grade, is assuming your school is like mine, where 9th grade starts high school, that's a great time to set up an appointment, go in and talk with the guidance counselor and just start that relationship. You know, you don't need to have all of activities that your child is going to do and what they're going to major in and all of that. But you definitely just want to have a relationship with the person who's going to help guide your student through those years.
Now, recently there was this article in The Atlantic.
Yes,
it's made the rounds. Have smartphones destroyed a generation? Yeah, I mean, it got a lot of clicks from that headline. It does bring up an important point, I think, that's worth talking about. There was a finding that they quoted that stated that teens are more depressed and isolated than previous generations. Now, maybe we're just more aware of that because we have these devices, but I guess the reality is smartphones aren't going away and technology is only going to keep evolving. So talk a bit about the roles of smartphones and iPads and other devices and the benefits and some of the cons.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of school districts that are incorporating them into their curriculum these days because they know that kids not only are digital natives who are in school right now, but they're also going to have to know how to use technology in order to have a career later in life. Every job, and there are many out there that our kids are going to have when they get older that have not even been invented yet, but every job is going to have an aspect of it that is technological in some way. And so they need to know how to use it. And so just like anything else in life, they need direction, they need parameters to stay within, they need boundaries, and they need supervision on social media, on, you know, using the internet, all of that stuff. You know, the new book that we're working on, Hypersext, talks a lot about boundaries and the online boundary around a child where, you know, you've got 7 billion people in the world and through the computer, they can potentially all have access to your child. Now, that's obviously a bit of a screaming headline, just like smartphones have destroyed a generation, but you know, it certainly is possible. And so you want to make sure that your child and your technology in your home are set up in a way to make sure that the child is protected, and that your child knows how to protect themselves too. You know, I think that technology can be used for very good purposes, and there are some wonderful things out there that technology is doing for our children, opening up so many different areas of research and interest, and allowing them to connect with so many people that maybe don't live near them but have the same interests, and that's really important. But kids need to know how to stay safe, what is appropriate online, and they need their parents to be able to guide them through that. And the schools as well. If the schools are using technology, they need to do some good education with the students about how to use it responsibly.
And what about limits on screen time?
Sure. I mean, the National Academy of Pediatrics certainly has some suggestions for that. I think, you know, from a parent perspective, one of the things that we've always tried to do is say every different parents and family situation is unique, and you need to weigh what your situation is against what the recommendations are from your doctor and from your school and all of that, and figure out what's best for you. There's no one size fits all, I don't believe anyway. But being able to sort through all of the different research and figure out what is going to be best for you is really important. And so every family needs to make that kind of decision, just like they would for anything else.
Yeah, and much like you would change your child's bedtime, you know, limiting perhaps screen time when they're younger and then allowing more as they get older.
For sure, absolutely. You know, that is something that is really important. And I always think of this back to school time as the perfect time of year to really do that check in with your children about all sorts of safety things, but also about the rules. You know, they're a year older now, and so maybe they want to have a little bit more screen time, or stay up a little bit later, or they want to be able to ride their bike alone to school, or whatever it might be. This is the time of year to check in and to see if they're able to do that, if you feel comfortable with them doing that and you feel that they're responsible enough to do that. And this is a great time of year to do that. So have that check-in time with your kids, with your family. Everybody sits down together. Sometimes it's a good idea maybe to talk to your partner, your spouse about it first, and go through the kinds of things that you're thinking about so you guys get on the same page, and then you can have the conversation with the kids too. That's a strategy we do, but it's
that's actually
that,
an excellent strategy.
Some parents do that.
It's always helpful to have a united front.
Yes.
And, you know, for any parent to just know what their expectations are and to make those clear to their children.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is the time of year as well where if a child is, you know, I know in my circle, a lot of parents use that middle school, the start of middle school, which here is sixth grade, around that 12-year age range is when a lot of kids end up getting a cell phone. Certainly some are earlier and some are later, but that seems to be a pretty commonly used time frame for that. So that becomes something that you need to set limitations on as well. And it's really important for parents to monitor what kids are doing on their phones, on their devices, on the internet, on, you know, if they're playing online games or whatever it is that they're doing. Parents need to know about it. They need to know who their friends are, and they need to be able to monitor it in whatever shape or form is going to work for you.
And that leads me to the last thing I wanted to touch upon, because it's been in the news a great deal lately, is cyberbullying and just bullying in general. Mm-hmm. It seems because of Facebook and other social apps, because kids are getting cell phones, that it is becoming, unfortunately, more prevalent, or we're hearing about it more.
Yeah, I think in some cases, I think it's just easier to get to people, you know? I mean, there's just so many more ways. And it's 24/7 with the cell phones and texting and the apps and all of that. It's more ways to get at somebody and to communicate with somebody. So the cause of bullying is still trying to use power over another person. And that really hasn't ever changed. It's just the access. And so you as a parent need to make sure that the restrictions that you have on your child, whether it's, you know, no cell phone use after 10 p.m. Or only for a couple hours on the weekend, or whatever it might be that you've decided that your rules are for your family, are enforced. But if you find that your child is having a problem, A, they need to be able to come to you and talk about it. If you're monitoring their online activities, you might be seeing something like that and you can start to have a conversation. And that's really important. You know, you can start to have that conversation even before you see a problem if you just sort of see different kinds of communications that might be a little bit worrying. They might not even be directed at your child, but if you have those conversations from the very start, say, hey, what's that person saying? Why are they saying it like that? How come they use that emoji? Or why did they, you know, say something to the other friend? You know, have those conversations early and often, and even before there's a problem. And that way, if a problem ever starts, you've got that foundation of having those conversations where you can build on it and hopefully get more answers more quickly. But monitoring is the number one thing. It's really important. And I know it takes up a lot of time. It's hard to do. But it is something that, you know, that parents need to do, especially as their kids get older. Don't stop when they get to be 15.
And I think it's good to have that conversation about what's appropriate and inappropriate. And to let your child know that you're a safe person to talk to. And you had mentioned previously about witnesses, when a child witnesses this sort of behavior, because that can be jarring for them and they don't necessarily know what to do.
Yeah, there's a group down here where I live in Florida that has what's called the bystander campaign. And I think it's really smart because when there's a bullying situation, you have the person who is doing the bullying and the person who is getting bullied. And they have, in often cases, it is one person's word against another person's word. But there are kids that see that happening, whether it's happening online or on social media, or whether it's happening in the hallways of a school or in the streets of the neighborhood. You know, there are people that see that. And so teaching the children who are on the outside looking in how to be, and they actually, they call it an upstander. You stand up for your friends. You stand up for other kids who might be in a tough situation. So be an upstander so that that way you can protect your peers. And you can also say, you know, that's not how I want to live my life. That's not what I want in my neighborhood. That's not what I want in my school. We want to have a positive relationship and a positive culture here, and this is how we're going to do it. And the way that, you know, this bully might be acting is not okay with us. There's strength in numbers. And the Upstander program, I think, is a really smart one. And those kids who are bystanders, who are witnesses, have a very powerful role to play for support.
Absolutely. Well, this is all great advice. I know it's a lot for parents to take in.
It sure is. One day at a time, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, if you can have that family dinner, you know, that's probably
if you can. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be sitting at the table. If it needs to be on the run, it still can be a family dinner, even if it's in the car. Been there, done that. It works. It's not perfect, but it works.
Just checking in, I think, is important, and I think it helps your child feel validated.
Absolutely.
Even if
and if dinner time is really hard for you, then try it at breakfast, or try it on Saturday morning, or you know, whatever. Just make some time to check in with your kids each week and see how things are going. You know, like my kids, you might say, "How was school today?" And they say, "Fine." What'd you do? Nothing, right? So try to ask different questions. There's a great list that's going around online. If you just Google questions to ask your kid about school, you'll find it. But some of the ones that seem to work with my kids, and they're a little bit strong-willed or a little contrary, or, you know, okay, what was the worst thing that happened at school today? Instead of what was the best thing? Because they sometimes want to talk more about the worst thing, and it just gets them thinking in a different way. But then they open up to you, and that's what's important, that they're opening up to you.
And they hear your voice in their heads at the important moment.
A parent, no matter what, a parent is the most important influence on their child, even if you don't think that your child is listening to you. You are the most important influence in their lives. And you just need to know that, and you need to just keep doing what you're doing.
Wonderful advice. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thanks, Julie.
Remind folks where they can find your books.
Oh, sure. So Stress-Free Potty Training and Stress-Free Discipline are both on Amazon. They're also at Barnes & Noble and other fine booksellers everywhere. The new book, Hypersexed, is not yet written or published. We are in the stages of doing that right now, so hopefully that will be out in stores fairly soon. And then we have a Facebook page as well, Stress-Free Parenting, where we always share lots of tips and tricks and great, interesting news stories and things like that. Atlantic Journal article was a good one that we shared. So hope everybody will join us on the Facebook page.
Absolutely. Everyone like and follow Stress-Free Parenting.
Yay!
And when you're done, be sure to follow and like us.
Yeah,
Tap the Pod on Twitter and Facebook. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thanks, Julie.